Hello, and welcome to Dice Roller News Desk, the show that keeps you up to date on happenings in the tabletop community. My name is Quinn, I'm your host, and today we're going to be discussing several topics, including Daggerheart, Critical Role's tabletop RPG system, which finally has a release date this coming May, the announcement of a potential Dungeons & Dragons TV show, and in-game minigames for Dungeons & Dragons, when they don't work, and when they do. But first, the news. Our indie plug of the week is Indie Press Revolution. IPR is a direct-to-consumer marketplace for high-quality indie tabletop RPGs, so if you, like me, have been looking to include more indie games in your roster, go check them out. And this week in convention reminders, badges for Gen Con are now on sale. Gen Con this year runs from July 31st to August 3rd, so if your boss is one who really needs time-off requests like 6 months in advance, now's the time to put in your request. PAX Unplugged this year will be held November 21st to 23rd, so we have a little while before badges go on sale for that. But PAX East is coming up much sooner, running May 8th to 11th. Badges for all 4 days are still available, including 4-day badges as well. And March 16th is the deadline to order if you want your badges mailed to you. So if you haven't done that yet, jump on it now. And with that, I'm going to bring in our co-host, Willie. Hi, Willie. Introduce yourself for the people.
Hey, Quinn. Hi, people. My name is Willie. I am, as you can probably gather from my being here, avid D&D and all things TTRPG fan, big into media, big into watching movies and shows and such. I'm a musical theater writer myself. I am also big into writing for TV too. That's what I'm trying to break into. And I just love talking about things ad nauseum that I'm interested in. So this is... Match made in heaven, I'd say. But hello.
Thanks for being here. And I understand that you have brought a couple of things for us to talk about today. So I'll start us off, as I mentioned, we now have a release date for Daggerheart, the new tabletop system by Critical Role.
Yes, in fact, we do. May 20th, 2025.
Approaching quickly. It looks like they have digital copies as well coming up for Demiplane and Drive-Thru RPG, and it looks like it'll be hitting your friendly local game stores on June 3rd. So,
wonderful.
Daggerheart, tell me what we think.
All right, so I've been looking through... So they released like their own Unearthed Arcana, I guess, their beta of the game. Mm. This like bundle... honestly, like... I'm cool with it because they did release like basically the entire game, like a full playable version of the game. They have like a full player package and a full GM package. And it has like a full like one shot that you can try out. It has kind of a class package for every single class, along with just their manuscript that's just like the full description of their game. And I've been reading it over and it's interesting. Like it's very like, I mean, it is, it's a D&D adjacent TTRPG. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot like that seems very familiar when coming over from D&D, but there's also a lot more like open-ended aspects to it and like a few mechanics that like, there's like some simpler mechanics, some more complicated mechanics, and I'm just very curious as to how it would play out.
Break it down for me as a D&D player, were I to jump into a game of Daggerheart, what would be familiar, what would I not be familiar with?
Yeah, for sure. So basically the main things that I'm, the biggest difference that I'm discerning is that there's still skill checks, but every skill check is made with, 2 d12s versus 1 d20. So your skill check range is basically on a base between 2 and 24 versus 1 and 20. And the main thing is that you have two different dice, two different d12s. They say many times in the playtest, like these D12 should be two different colors. Like, and they're like, make them two very different colors that are based on two aspects of your own character. And then let me just go in and pull out the chapter on it, just so I'm not saying any any falsehoods.
Two different colored dice is great for the dice goblins.
Exactly. This is just feeding their our deepest desires. Okay, so basically what they here's how they describe it. Hope and fear represent the duality of the world between beyond the characters and how the world around them impacts the action they're attempting. One of your duality dice is your hope die. The other is your fear die. So anytime, like in normal D&D, you want to do something, even attacking is done with these two dice. If you say there's a check, like it's a, persuasion check, your DM asks you to roll, and you roll 2d12. You roll your hope die and your fear die. If the hope die is higher than the fear die, you rolled with hope. So hope won over fear. If your fear die rolls higher than your hope die, you've rolled with fear and fear has won over. And that is like separate from whether or not you succeed the skill check or not. You can succeed or fail with hope, or you could succeed or fail with fear. So no matter which die is higher, you always combine the two totals together, and that is the number plus your modifiers that get added to the skill check to see if you succeed or not. So say I roll with fear, or say I roll a skill check, and say I roll like a 6 and a 5. The hope die is higher. I rolled an 11. Let's say that passes the skill check, and my hope die was higher. So basically what that means is not only do I pass the skill check, but I also gain a hope point. And I have a bank of hope points. I think it's 5 is like your max. So every time I succeed, not even succeed, every time I make a skill check and hope die is higher, I earn a hope point or a token. I'm not sure which. And then if I roll with fear, whether I succeed or not, something negative happens. Think of it as an inspiration token is given to the DM to use against the players in any way, shape, or form. So say I rolled that same skill check and I succeed, but I succeed with fear. Maybe I succeed that skill check, but something bad happens to me as a result. Or the DM can choose to pocket that fear token and cash it in later as a random evil surprise.
And so spoiler alert for the audience, Willie and I have talked about this a little bit beforehand, but I'll bring up what we had talked about. What I'm getting from this functionality of like the hope die and the fear die as a separate mechanic from whether you succeed at your succeed on your role or not, is this emphasis on like the interiority of the character. We talked a little bit about it being a very like role play heavy system.
So it's like it's super, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it so it's like moving away from like the binary success or fail. Like the main thing that I'm taking from Daggerheart is that it is trying to make concrete rules out of the way that experienced DMs already play the game. So someone who's a very experienced DM, if a player just barely succeeds a skill check, that's going to create a slightly different outcome versus someone like way exceeding it or getting a critical success. Whereas someone who is a less experienced DM or a first time DM may see it as more of like a binary, you succeed or you fail. Adding hope and fear makes it a requirement basically that not everything, like there are more consequences to what a player does versus just they succeed at something or they fail at something. So it makes it a little more three-dimensional. And I think it'd be really cool. Like it's definitely one of those like mind-bending things to get over of like this is not like a d20 based game, and like kind of shifting how you do skill checks. But I think the main thing that I'm taking away from this is just like a quick read, is that at its core, it's very similar still to D&D. Like it's still like a game based on checks and rolling.
Yeah. And to clarify for the audience, neither Willie nor I have played Daggerheart yet, though we very much would like to. And if you would like to get your hands on a game of Daggerheart, Critical Role and Darrington Press will be running games at a variety of cons coming up throughout the year, including Gamma Expo, Gen Con, UK Games Expo, and PAX Unplugged. So if you're headed to any of those in the year 2025, you can join in Game of Daggerheart without having to buy the entire set, which is, yeah, tell me the price tag on that set there, Willie.
The price, it's pretty hefty. Let me get to it. I have to go through the whole.
But yeah, and of course, as Willie mentioned earlier, that there's, you know, you can get your hands on the beta version of things with a little bit more ease. And, you know, with if I recall correctly, we found that it was a fairly comparable price point to a lot of the Wizards of the Coast bundles and stuff.
So it's $60 for the core set. The game is also another main thing that we can get into if we'd like to get more in depth, is it's a card system, like a card-based system. So rather than having a character sheet and you're writing out just everything about your character, like spells and abilities are attributed to a deck of cards, and you kind of build you build your hand, and that's how you kind of control your character. So the core set is $60. It comes with the 279 cards, the full hardcover book, and that's it. Whereas the core set limited edition is $150, and that includes a 1/7 set of dice, 2 duality dice, a bundle of character sheets, a DM screen, and then a bunch of tokens. So interesting, because it's pretty pricey. I would put it at more expensive than like a Wizards of the Coast, like their when like they do a full module. Their $60 set, that's makes sense for like a typical D&D thing, because like just like the book and like the core set. Their higher end bundle, Wizards of the Coast, is usually what, like $90 for like the 3 books and the DM screen, whereas this is $150. And you get all the cards. It comes in like a box.
You get all the stuff.
You get all the stuff.
You can pre-order either the core set or the limited edition set at daggerheart.com or Darrington Press. I definitely see the appeal of like the card system. I find that, especially for, you know, if you're DMing for new players, having physical cards in front of them helps to differentiate abilities and items and stuff like that. I think I would miss my D20. Anything else I would miss while as a D&D player coming over to Daggerheart?
The big one, like probably the biggest, most, I wouldn't say controversial, but like the hardest thing to adjust to is no initiative. That is not turn-based combat. So let me go through and find like the exact language they use for it. But it seems to be kind of like theater of the mind taken to its most extreme place. It's all based on telling the best story for the combat. So it's combat focused on like what makes the most narrative sense. So kind of the whole table is feeling like the cadence of the battle and kind of feeling when the best time to strike is. And so that means that you're not really limited on like your turn. You have like an action, and in that action you can do any of the typical D&D things. I think they're limited by, you can't like just take action after action after action. But I believe besides that, here, let's see.
And you know, Willie and I, as theater people, we are really very comfortable with the theater of the mind. This is definitely a departure from, you know, the Daggerheart system feels to me that Critical Role throwing their hat in the ring of sort of classic high fantasy RPG systems, on par with Wizards of the Coast. However, it is in that respect quite a departure from the origins of Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop RPGs, in the sense that, you know, those were originally coming out of the wargaming community. many an experienced DM, I think, will encourage amongst players, you know, working together in combat and combo moves and the like. How do we feel about, you know, throwing in fully on that instead of, you know, some of the tactician thinking necessary for, you know, a more Dungeons and Dragons style combat scenario?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's like, I think this is more like, again, to just the point of like, it's them trying to gamify and put into rules the way that more experienced players and like DMs play the game. So it's like, right, it's like they don't.
It's a big thought.
It's a big thought. Because I think that like when you're a new DM. Like, I'm seeing all of this, like, from the mind of, like, someone who is new to the game, who, like, maybe I've watched a good amount of Critical Role, but I've never played D&D myself, and now they come up with this, and it seems attractive to me, and I'm like, I want to play this. I think I can see some difficulty with jumping into combat when there isn't, like, a set turn structure. I feel like, for new players, a bit of a more tactical approach can make sense if you're new to the game, because you're going to think, when you're a new player and you're put into combat, you're thinking less about like, oh, what is going to be the most narratively satisfying thing, or you're thinking of what can I do, how can I kill the things in front of me, and will it be cool?
Yeah,
that kind of thing. They have like an action tracker, which they've described as, it's not necessary. It's like it's totally optional to use this action tracker, which is, let me see. They said action tracker is in use. Your character can still make moves at any time. However, whenever you use an action, you must place a character token on the action tracker and resolve the action, ending your move. So basically, the action tracker is like the highest form of initiative they have in this game. So it's just to kind of make sure that no player is taking like action after action after action. So that's like the most extent of initiative that they have. And I don't know. I think I definitely would like to try it. I think trying it would definitely let me understand it and get it a bit more in my brain. But I think it could be cool. I think if it's like the right table dynamic, I think new players could definitely make it work and make it fun. I feel like there's definitely, when you're in turn-based, the biggest drawback from that, especially at like early level, is like, oh, I let me try this one thing that I can do. It didn't work. Like, let me just hit him. That's all I can do. It missed. All right. Well, that's it for me for like 20 minutes. So I see it's like to make people more engaged, to kind of keep everyone in, because early game and like high game, I feel like when you're at level 12 and like half the party is magic users, everyone's turn is going to take like maybe 5 minutes. So it's real easy to, if it's like not the most intense combat, to just take your turn, kind of zone out, and then come back in when it is your turn. We've all done it.
Building little dice towers and then whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. So it's to avoid that, is to make sure people are engaged. And I would just want to try it. Like, at first I was like, this is stupid. But now I'm like, hey, let's approach with kindness.
So once Willie and I have had a chance to try out a game of Daggerheart, we'll report back on our findings. And it sounds like if we were to talk about Daggerheart and who this system is for, this system is for people who are maybe new to tabletop RPGs, people who know that they have an instinct for storytelling, or know that they want a roleplay heavy game, and maybe younger players as well, who are more interested in saying, I kill the monster and look cool doing it, rather than players who are more interested in reading through hundreds of pages of rulebook and finding the most optimal sequencing for their turn. Which, if that's your kind of fun, that is totally cool too.
Then go for it.
Willie, you had some interesting news for us regarding D&D on the big screen. Tell me about it.
Yes, indeed. All right, so the D&D movie was released. Did you okay? First, I just want to know: did you like the D&D movie? I feel like we didn't discuss
I really enjoyed the D&D movie. If I could name only one complaint, it was that there's the scene where Chris Pine, they're all sitting around the campfire, and Chris Pine does his bard speech about the "Don't give up hope," and all I can see is that scene from the, and this is to no fault of the movie, I just see that scene from the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie where Rocket the Raccoon says, "And now we're all standing around in a circle like a-holes." I can't, anytime a movie does that scene now, I can't see it any other way.
That's all you think about.
But other than that, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was very fun, contained. Yeah. You know, it was an adventure for anybody and had plenty of Easter eggs for the fans.
Yeah, like my biggest things with that movie is that it was so, like, it was just a high budget, like, high fantasy, full magic movie, which I feel like we don't get. I feel like a lot of fantasy stuff has, like, we're still in that, like, gritty, dark,
a post Game of Thrones world,
exactly. Which, like, shows like Wheel of Time and Rings of Power are, I think, doing good things to pull us out of that, because, like, they're having these, like, more magic, like, full magic, colorful shows, which I think is, like, a step in the right direction. But myself, a lot of people were very excited about the potential for, like, just a bunch of D&D movies all the time. Everyone in the cast said, yes, let's, like, we're all down to make more. Paramount, and the president of Paramount said, let's see how the movie does. Movie grossed $205 million worldwide, which, not that much considering they tried to make it, like, a big summer blockbuster. Yeah. Like, they were trying to get that Fast and Furious money. They did not get that Fast and Furious money. So they switched over to, oh, maybe we'll do a TV show. Still show ran by the same, one of the producers from the movie. Paramount, I was going to put it on Paramount Plus. But director, or the president of Paramount said, the movie just didn't make enough money to, like, justify. So they have now sold the rights over to Netflix. And Netflix has announced that they will be making a D&D show titled The Forgotten Realms, named after just the D&D setting. Drew Crivello is still attached as the showrunner. Mm-hmm. He was the showrunner on the Paramount Plus project. He's going to be the writer, the EP, showrunner. He also worked on... He's worked with on Fox projects a lot. He worked a lot with Sean Levy on Deadpool. Mm-hmm. He was one of the writers for Deadpool, developed it, produced it. He wrote, besides that, the only other writer credit he has that I found is We Crash, which is about the fall of WeWork. Starring Jared Leto and Anne Hathaway. Haven't seen it.
That was one of the ones that turned out to be a cult or something, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Love a good movie about the fall of a cult.
Or it was a show, not a movie. Excuse me. So he's going to be a showrunner. Sean Levy is going to be an executive producer. I'm not sure what extent he'll have. I feel like whenever... Even when he's just producing a project, I feel like he puts a lot of his own flavor into it. Sean Levy, he directed all three Night at the Museum movies.
Some classics of cinema.
Yeah, he directed the latest Deadpool and Wolverine, Free Guy, The Atom Project. He's an executive producer on Stranger Things. He's directed a bunch of episodes, especially in the last season. Accredited D&D fan. I feel like when I watched the D&D movie, which I don't think he was attached to, but it did capture a bit of that, like, mid-2000s action adventure comedy that, like, Night at the Museum does, and, like, Night at the Museum has this, like, very D&D coded nature to, like, its encounters, like, its interactions. So I feel like if these two guys are given the creative freedom that they typically are given, It could be really good.
I feel like just based on the names attached, I get an idea of what the tone of the show would be.
Something colorful, something fun, which I feel like is what it needs. Because, I mean, the biggest fear with Netflix is, like, they'll do something closer to, like, The Witcher.
Yeah.
Like, something...
Which, don't get me wrong, Witcher was good.
Witcher was great.
I just feel like when we're trying to capture the essence of the tone of what D&D is.
Right, exactly.
Well, something a little more lighthearted.
I feel like ever since Game of Thrones came out, it has affected fantasy media because every streamer has now tried to produce a show trying to mimic Game of Thrones, trying to like capture on its like get chase on its success to be like, this is our Game of Thrones. Like, don't go rewatch Game of Thrones, watch The Witcher instead.
Yeah. Had the same effect on fantasy big screen media that The Dark Knight had on the superhero genre.
Exactly. And Zack Snyder is still recovering. So, but yeah, so I'm excited. I mean, who knows when this is going to come out? Like, this is, they just announced that they've assembled the team for it last week. And we'll see what happens. I'm hoping for good, for good stuff. Although it could just fall, what you said, under the Netflix guise of just one really good season and then it gets canceled.
Yeah, I'm still salty. Do the kids use that word these days? I'm still mad. I am still mad about Shadow and Bone,
because what it was, I watched the first season and that was great.
Yeah. And then they were like, you don't get more of it. And I'm like, there's so much. You have an established fan base around books that have so much content, a well-established world. You know it's popular. And listen, I know that, you know, there were issues with production and it's high budget because it's fantasy and then COVID and then the strike. But still mad that they canceled it. Not Netflix has a habit of doing that, and I don't want it done to, if we're getting a D&D show, I don't want an 8-episode season then canceled. No. I don't want it.
I genuinely think, and this is into like a whole discussion about TV that I can go on for hours, but I think this show should, I'm hoping Netflix goes off the rails of what they typically do and give us a weekly release. Because I feel like weekly release, literally, like, it gives a show life, and it makes people actually discuss it. Like, Severance is coming out right now. I'm like, for the first time in a long time, like, people at work, people just like out and about are asking, like, oh, have you seen the latest Severance? And I feel like it's like, it feels like we're back in like the early 2010s when like Game of Thrones was coming out, and people were like talking about like, oh, did you watch last night's episode? And I feel like with streaming shows, when they drop the full season, there's like the hype around like the first like week when it comes out, but I feel like it just dies off and tapers off so fast.
Yeah.
Especially with D&D, which is like just asks for like, you know, one session an episode. Like, there's such a good arc in like a session that like a bit of a Monster of the Week vibe, a bit of a like every session, every episode has its own arc that should be like enjoyed fully.
The episodic nature really lends itself to, especially if you're doing such an iconic world like the Forgotten Realms, like you need the time. Like, I feel like a TV show is the perfect format, you know, as we've seen with stuff like The Mandalorian. And when you've got an established world and you want to go explore new corners and see, you know, see iconic stuff, TV is the right way to go, and I would hope that they could make good use of that.
Right, because Star Wars is a great example, because Disney is doing my thoughts on every Star Wars show, different topic, but like Mandalorian, Andor, which I really liked, Skeleton Crew, which is a new show that came out, really great. They all were week by week, and had like a very like, not necessarily Monster of the Week, but like a good fleshed out arc within the episode. And I feel like when people are creating a show that's going to be released week by week, whether they know it or not, that's going to, at the time, when you're watching week by week, you're able to like enjoy the full arc of each episode more and more, and you're less concerned about what's going to happen next because you know you have to wait. So you're like, this is what I got for the week. I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to sit in these 45 minutes while I can, mm-hmm. versus I'm sitting down for 8 hours and I'm watching this entire season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, besides my own personal gripes with Netflix, Netflix has not been receiving the best press as of late after, you know, mm-hmm. the debacle with hiking up their price and with the, you know, not letting more than one family member log in and all that good stuff. And there was, mm-hmm. you mentioned something about how they are now specifically instructing writers to write shows in a specific manner to be watched in the background.
Yes. Yeah. So it is, and I would need to check my sources on this, mm-hmm. Cause there was an article written about it. Not sure how confirmed it is. It's like from the experiences of like writers rooms at Netflix, mm-hmm. That, essentially Netflix, based on its algorithm, based on everything, they're pushing and encouraging writers rooms to write in a manner that allows for you to watch in the background, paying half attention, either on your phone, doing something else. So writers are encouraged to, when writing their show, have characters verbalize their actions more and re-explain parts of the plot. Couple examples. I was watching the latest season of Outer Banks, which, disclaimer, I loved that show. I do. I have a shirt that says Mentally Dating John B. I love that show with my whole heart. But it's not great. There's a part where they are trapped underground and they have to lift like a stone cover to get out, mm-hmm. and you could close your eyes and you would be able to know what was happening, because they were saying, they would say in succession, we have to lift the lid, can you lift it, I'm trying to lift it and it's not going, let me try, I'm coming down the ladder. Like, genuinely saying every single thing you're doing. Me and my roommates, we also started watching Apple Cider Vinegar, mm-hmm. which is, it's like a bio show, like crime. It's very similar to, it's like a bio series unpacking like a scam influencer who faked having brain cancer to push her health lifestyle. Yeah. But she's giving a speech at the end of one episode, like an acceptance speech, and she is reciting it. And then she becomes very disingenuous because we realize that she is saying a very emotional story that was told to her by somebody else. And it starts and you're like, oh, shoot, this is the story. But Netflix, to make sure you know, does a flashback to her being told that story, which happened not only in the same episode, 20 minutes before.
Oh, no. That's like that's – oh, boy.
So it's already being kind of rolled out where it's like Netflix is making this content just to be half watched.
While you're doing your laundry.
So let's hope the D&D show doesn't have something similar. Yeah. Like,
sounds like from the creative team attached to the D&D show, it could be everything we want it to be. However, mm-hmm. in order for it to be everything we would want it to be, it would have to seriously break the mold of the platform mm-hmm. where it is going to be streaming. So we will have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. And the last thing, I just wanted to discuss some raw mechanics of Dungeons and Dragons today, especially since we were talking about, you know, skill checks and how they're sort of ever present in Dungeons and Dragons, and even in new systems like the upcoming Daggerheart. I ask you this question, Willie. Is there such a thing as a mini game in D&D that's not just opposing skill checks one after the other until the end of time?
That's the question that we all go to bed haunted by. In my latest D&D campaign, one of my roommates is DMing it. He's running a modified module of Wild Beyond the Witchlight. Mm-hmm. It's super fun. He's added so many cool things. I don't know the module very well, so it's like, I don't know what he's added, what he hasn't. I'm excited to, once we finish, go back and ask him, like, so what'd you do? He's added like a bunch, like a BBEG that's kind of mm-hmm. looming over, establishing like a future arc. But there is a baseball mini game mm-hmm. that he created and introduced, which ended up being so much fun. But I kind of like teasing was like, is this just going to be a bunch of competed skill checks in the form of baseball where the pitcher rolls and the batter rolls and and whoever is higher wins or uh-huh. strikes. And he went, that is exactly what this is. And of course, like, competing skill checks, always fun. Like, it's quick, it's fast, it's like two rolls, go, fight. I have thought a bit about like what an alternative mini game could be. Because of course we say mini game, but also it's D&D, everything is based around dice.
Yeah.
So whether it's a competing skill roll or not, dice are going to be involved. I think something that he did that I thought was very interesting and kind of spiced things up was he allowed quote unquote cheating in the baseball game. Mm-hmm. So it's contested skill checks, but however, we were still in a form of initiative, based on who was up to bat and who was in the infield, who was in the outfield, what team was up to bat and such. And he said, you can use magic and you can use your abilities in these skill checks to sway modifiers and things like that. So like the opposing team was up to bat and we threw the pitch. It hit, the batter hit it, but then someone cast grease in between home and first plate.
Mm-hmm.
Batter slipped and fell on the grease. So it's like there was
such a good use of that spell.
Oh yeah,
love that spell.
I went up to pitch. I'm playing an artificer. I used catapult. I cast the spell catapult on the ball.
Another
to throw it extra fast.
Fantastic utility spell.
And he was like, okay. Now they're going to make this check with disadvantage because the ball is going at them really fast. So I think kind of zhuzhing up the skill checks can be a pretty interesting way
mm-hmm.
to change it. I don't know if you have any thoughts on potential mini games.
Well, I was going back through some Critical Role four-sided dives today, and mm-hmm. they went back through the one where they were discussing episode 79 of campaign 3, and they were talking about in that episode there are some inter-party challenges, and one of them is a, you know, what we might call like a mini game or a special challenge where and you know this is the only the kind of stuff that works, you know, if you're in person at a table together, but
of course.
Matt as the DM says, all right, I need three volunteers among the players, and three of them volunteer, and he gives them all blindfolds, and then he has the other characters, because it's you know it's a trust exercise intentionally set up, you know, by the characters, and so in order to mimic this, you know, he places like a handmade board and has them put a mini on it, and then with instructions from the characters and players who can see, the blindfolded player has to guide their mini along a twisty turny path, and if they step off of it, they fall and die. And so I'm like, you know, there are some limitations to that, you know, including, you know, your DM's willingness to get crafty, literally, and you know, is confined to more you know, in person play, but you know, it's a hit, but it's not opposed skill checks.
It's not opposed skill checks. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I don't know whether we would consider that like a mini game or sort of like, you know, because it was on a battle map basically with minis, so it was right. Like it was like a non-combat map challenge basically.
I see that. I would call that a mini game. Yeah. I would fit in that category. I feel like. Yeah, going beyond the games and like the rules and like things that you can do, I feel like that's mm-hmm. probably the way to go. Like in my different roommate, same apartment, in our old campaign, this was like maybe a year ago, we were in the Feywild, and we were met with the court of this Fey king.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to get ourselves in, we convinced everyone that we were the hired band coming to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said, okay, to all the players, he said, okay, you now have to perform an original song to the king to see if he likes it. And he was like, so everyone give me a performance check. And we all did. So we were like, oh, so this is just us writing the songs. So it was like 3 successes, 2 fails. And he mm-hmm. went, okay, you now have 3 minutes to write and prepare an original song for me.
Oh, incredible.
For the king. So there were skill checks involved, and we thought that was going to be it. But he was like, no, that is modifying how much time you have to actually do the challenge, which was write this original song. And we did, and it was awful. But then it was like, oh my God, it put way more stakes on the situation. And it was just super fun. So thinking outside the box is the way to go. Yes. I see.
Thinking outside the box can make for some genuinely memorable experiences. I think also of one of my first long-term campaigns, my DM, Alec, shout out to Alec, gave us a mini game of the variety of like resource management. It was basically... we were managing a hotel, and he's like, all right, you know, our characters would come back in and check at the hotel and that we were running, and he would give us the spreadsheets and ask us where we wanted to allot, you know. It was, oh God, what are the ones I'm thinking of? Like Roller Coaster Tycoon, you know, like the,
and oh, sure. like Sim City, like, yeah, full on, like,
like, yeah, like of just of like resource management, any of like the mobile games. It eventually tapered off because it was a city that the city was there, you know, shortly thereafter struck by a plague of vampires.
Yeah, yeah. Then the game started. And okay.
But you know, thinking outside the box and just, you know, trying stuff to see what your group finds entertaining, finds fun, because that definitely qualifies as a mini game. You know, you are Dungeons and Dragons adventurers, except when you're hotel managers.
That's like my dream campaign that I've always wanted to plan and run. Is just you. The party is the advisory board for a city council,
mm-hmm.
And they have to just work on just different legislation in the city on like parking permits and like zoning. And they're always prepared for like, oh, this is the before like there's a dragon invasion. No, that's it. You're just in a normal place and you're just managing the city. These are your jobs.
I'm here to slay dragons and infrastructural logistics, and I'm all out of dragons.
Yeah, I'm all out of dragons. See, this guy gets it.
So, yes, I think there are alternatives out there for just, mini games that are contested skill checks into oblivion. You might have to get creative and push your players to...
humiliation, know. Yeah, probably.
Really, you know, I think it's a matter of, you know, pushing some aspect of the game, like, out of total immersion and kind of above the table a little bit is what I think these, you know, some of these have in common. But yeah, and you know, let them impale themselves on their own song. Yes, we believe in you, DMs out there, and your ability to come up with entertaining mini games, whether they be entertaining for your players or just for you.
It's improv games. They're improv.
Yeah, it's real. Listen, really, if you really want to know how to create good mini games for your Dungeons and Dragons, please go find your local improv class. Perhaps there's a Groupon.
I understand if you are an ex-theater kid that you don't want to admit this to yourself, but if you're an ex-theater kid, you are playing D&D, and it is a group, regularly scheduled, long-form improv.
Correct.
And that is what you're doing. That is your hobby.
And, you know, seek other sources as well. I think I recently built a puzzle based on, like, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. Don't tell my players. They haven't encountered it yet. But, you know, seek inspiration from outside of your little pet world that you've built.
Exactly. Theft is the best.
Theft is, to quote my uncle quoting his favorite comedian, I never stole a joke I didn't like.
Oh, and there we have it.
And with that, I wish you all a very good night, a very good morning, a very good day, wherever you are. Take care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you soon.